All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, January 17th. Coming up this hour, we're going to talk a bit about forestry, conservation, and economic development, and how there are right ways and wrong ways to engage in those activities. And unfortunately, it appears a single Republican legislator from up north is jeopardizing a well-planned project that could bring development, recreational, and conservation opportunities to some of the largest tracts of privately held forest land in the North Woods. But she wants to put the brakes on that because, I mean, we got to think about the developers, got to give them something to do, right? Or whatever the reason might be. We have a guest coming up at 7:30 that's going to talk about this not-so-transparent process that is threatening millions of dollars in economic benefits. So that's coming up a little later. A reminder, you can call us with what's on your mind on this Tuesday morning at 844-967-2789. Or the line up north is 715-388-7155. Send us an email, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. I am still trying to process how the story about classified documents being found at President Biden's home in Delaware can be put on any kind of an equal footing with the many, many, many classified documents found at Mar-a-Lago. But any comparison has to begin with this disclaimer. Anything that was done improperly by a Republican or a Democrat needs to be investigated. It needs to be a transparent investigation. And if there was wrongdoing, there needs to be consequences of some type, ranging from something symbolic to something criminal, depending on what it is. What you won't find here is any effort to try to protect somebody at all costs because there's a D or an R next to their name, even though that's exactly what Republicans have been doing with Donald Trump's heist, shall we say, of classified documents and storing them willy-nilly at Mar-a-Lago, a place where members of the public can almost come and go as they please. We have seen multiple stories about people being able to just wander around unimpeded. That compares to a private residence where that doesn't happen. But Republicans in key positions of Congress, that's not stopping them from firing up the Hypocrite Express and trying to make the two sound similar. For example, the Republican chair of the House Oversight Committee, I want to get his last name right. I know it's Comer, James Comer, congressman from Kentucky. He is demanding visitors logs for the Biden residence in Wilmington, Delaware. One problem, though, that's not a thing. It's never been a thing. A spokesperson for the White House counsel's office said in a statement, quote, like every president across decades of modern history, his personal residence is personal. But upon taking office, President Biden did restore the norm and tradition of keeping White House visitors' logs and publishing them regularly, a not at all subtle dig at President Trump, who not only does not have visitors' logs at Mar-a-Lago, he wouldn't release the visitors' logs to the White House. To the White House. That raised a lot of eyebrows in 2017. The lack of transparency. Now, of course, when we're talking about Congressman Comer, like so many of the others, Ron Johnson and other Republicans on Capitol Hill, they appear to be blinded by, forgive the cliche, but it's appropriate here. In this case, Comer appears to have Hunter Biden derangement syndrome. Let's listen.
If we can keep it about Hunter Biden, that would be great.
Just a quick thing. It's part of a longer sentence that he said, but it was basically that, just repeated.
It's just amazing that, again, it's like Beetlejuice. If you say Hunter Biden's name enough times, apparently he will then commit a crime or something that would be worthy of investigation. And instead, we have this laughable notion that you hear on right-wing media that, you know, because you've got Hunter Biden not having, you know, the most straight and narrow adulthood, and now you have Joe Biden mishandling classified documents, a couple of them that were found at his home, now suddenly they're a crime family, is to hear right-wing media is to talk about this kind of family business. Again, irony is not only dead. I mean, it was dug up out of its grave and shot a few more times by folks who want nothing to do with what the Trump family has been doing, mingling business and politics and grifting yours and my tax dollars. And it really comes back to that almost delicious moment of silence from Ron Johnson on Meet the Press on Sunday, when Chuck Todd just straight up said, are you going to get this upset about Jared Kushner getting $2 billion from the Saudis and potentially sharing state secrets? And there was nothing. And Ron Johnson went back to blaming the media. And I'm sure we'll say something about Hunter Biden again later today. But again, the both sides-ism is dripping, and it shouldn't be. There is so very lack of equity between the two cases. More after this. You're up north. Again, a reminder, Sarah Godlewski tomorrow on the program, along with Appeals Court judicial candidate Chris Taylor. And then on Thursday, Hometown Health with Kristen Lyerly and the role of music and music education in good health. There were commemorations of the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. done all across the country and all across the state yesterday, marking the 42nd Martin Luther King Day in this country. And obviously, there are a lot of positive things that can be talked about in terms of the inspiration that Dr. King provided, the leadership, the knowledge base, the courage, and of course, the dignity. And a lot of that was done at celebrations in the state capitol, for example. There were impassioned speeches and cross-cultural musical acts amid the beauty of the Capitol Dome, writes the Wisconsin State Journal, Lucas Robinson, in that edition this morning. There were proceedings in cities across the state. There was gospel music. There was civil rights-inspired pieces. There was multicultural dance. These are all good and worthy things that remind us of what we are capable of when we embrace the angels of our better nature. And then there's Ted Cruz and, you know, Ron Johnson and, you know, other folks like that and Glenn Grothman. And it's just worth reminding that if you're going to protect Dr. King's legacy, and if you're going to continue the struggle for equality, then you're also going to have to fight against those folks who would whitewash his life and whitewash his legacy and whitewash his quotes, to put it quite succinctly. And Ted Cruz is simply the poster child for it, because his is one that comes up when you look at what people had to say for statements about Dr. King. And this was Ted Cruz's statement yesterday. Today we honor the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He challenged Americans to judge people by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. That is an outright perversion of Dr. King's favorite quote. It is whitewashing to the point of, I mean, It's a racial misappropriation of that quote to say that Dr. King wants Americans to judge people by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. I mean, it is the very definition of whitewashing, a quote. There were plenty of other quotes that Ted Cruz and Ron Johnson and others could have put up yesterday that Dr. King said. Why didn't Ted Cruz put up this one? The fact that capitalism was built on the exploitation and suffering of the black slaves and continues to thrive on the exploitation of the poor, both black and white, both here and abroad, are the evils of society. That was a Dr. King quote from 1967. Also that year, he said, a nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. I didn't see that in any Republicans' social media feeds yesterday, nor this one. The problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power. Well, of course not. If that quote had come up, it would have been to attack it as, again, socialism. Because redistribution of political and economic power does not mean turning the tables and that every person who has a more privileged place in society is now oppressed. It means people who have been oppressed and vulnerable have the same opportunities as those who have always had them from a place of privilege. In other words, equality within democracy is not a zero-sum game. That giving rights to people who should have had them for a very long time and are finally getting them, giving them those rights does not take away rights from you. It's not that kind of a radical distribution, as Dr. King is saying. It's a matter of providing that uplift, that opportunity, so that we don't have to have essentially the institutional racism that continues to plague our country. And I think that somebody down the road is maybe going to come up with a more palatable way, I guess, of describing systemic racism or institutional racism. Because right now, when you mention that or you mention the word privilege, you right away from the right wing get this gag reflex that says, you're calling me racist. You're saying that my children have to be taught that they are racists and that they should hate themselves in their history, when that's not at all what this means. That's not at all what it says. Again, you're basically attempting to whitewash a definition the same way that you're attempting to whitewash our history lessons. We are a society that is still indebted for the crimes and inequities that were put in place long before we came along. That doesn't make us wrong or bad. What it should do, however, is first, A, force us to recognize what happened in the past, B, recognize that it still has an impact today, and so C, not feel threatened or afraid, but frankly proud, to try to do things to help offset that systemic or institutional racism. The lack of quality health care, for example, in communities of color. The lack of education opportunities in communities of color. The disparities in the criminal justice system for people of color. These are things that can be addressed. I'm not going to say fixed, because it's going to take a long time. But you have to start taking steps. You have to start taking more steps. And doing so by people who are currently in power, by people by virtue of their own whiteness come from a place of privilege, to make those steps should not be something that you know triggers a gag reflex from a political standpoint. It should bring in a feeling of civic pride that you're doing your part to help make the world a bit more fair for all of your neighbors, not just your physical neighbors in, well, let's say up here in the 54729, which I dare say is 99% white, but your neighbors nationwide across this country. And we can do that. My goodness, especially right now. Right now in Wisconsin, with a $6 billion budget surplus, surely this would be the opportunity to assist in the efforts that Dr. King helped prompt in all of us to improve the quality of education for every Wisconsin student, to provide better opportunities for healthcare service, for screenings and early interventions, for example, to make changes that people have talked about in the criminal justice system for years. We're not talking about reinventing the wheel here. It's not about reinventing the wheel. It's about helping make the investment so that the wheel goes around the way it should be. These are things that are all possible right now, but they can't be done if you're like Ted Cruz and claiming that all Dr. King wanted was for us to not look at skin color, but content of character. In fact, the very method by which you're perverting Dr. King's quote says a great deal about the content of your character. And then there's Glenn Grothman. The Wisconsin congressman has a flag displayed outside his office in Washington, D.C. Of course, there is the American flag. But then there is a flag that has some historical significance, but much like some of Dr. King's quotes, and much like some of our history in the United States, this flag's story has been perverted over the years to the point where it is a recognized symbol of Christian nationalism. And yet there it sits outside Glenn Grothman's office. The Wisconsin Examiner did a story about that recently. It's the white flag that has the image of the pine tree and the phrase, "an appeal to heaven," that's on it. And in Henry Redmond's story in the Wisconsin Examiner, he notes that Grothman put it up with a greeting to come visit him in his office, but that Grothman's office did not respond to a request for comment about the decision to display the flag. Rodman writes that experts say it has ties to a sect of Christian nationalism that was deeply connected to the planning of the January 6th riot. Christian nationalism is a belief that Christians must fight to take back America from non-Christians. Matt Taylor, a Protestant scholar at the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies, told the Wisconsin Examiner there were possibly hundreds of appeal to heaven flags flying on the Capitol grounds on January 6th, and at least two documented instances in which the flags were flown by rioters who breached the building that day. Now, it was designed during the American Revolution. It was used by the Massachusetts Navy. It's associated with George Washington because he commissioned a number of ships that flew the flag. The article says the phrase is taken from the philosopher John Locke and is meant to symbolize citizens' right to armed revolution against tyranny. The flag, again, is now being seen as a dog whistle signal of kinship between far-right and white supremacist movements, according to the Columbia University Tau Center for Digital Journalism. Displaying the flag, along with other right-wing memes, comes with a certain amount of plausible deniability because people can say, well, we're just supporting our history. You know, just like the Confederate flag. We're not racists. We're just, you know, nodding to our history. It's not clear, the Wisconsin Examiner article says, why Grothman chose to display this particular flag outside his office, but Taylor says it definitely sends a signal. He says he's obviously sending a statement with it. It's definitely attached to this right-wing Christian mobilization. I don't know whether Congressman Grothman knows about the flag. I wouldn't want to attribute consciousness, but it's definitely sending a signal. Well, I say this as somebody who served alongside Glenn Grothman when we both were in the Wisconsin State Senate. His history is well documented with his, forgive the pun, but off-color comments about communities of color, about holidays, about living standards, you name it. In other words, for folks who were organizing these celebrations of the life of Martin Luther King yesterday, if you tell them that a symbol of Christian nationalism is now on display outside of Congressman Grothman's office, it's the least surprising thing that they'll hear all day. We'll have our guest coming up after the break to talk about Wisconsin forestry. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? It'd be a paradise, put up a fucking line.
Now, every couple of weeks or so on Tuesday, we talk to our friend Hans Breitenmoser up in Lincoln County about things that are happening in farming, in the rural economy, and what have you. And Hans asked that we share this time slot with somebody that he thought was a great voice to bring on to talk about partners in forestry and the need for responsible conservation programs in our forests. And so we're very happy to be welcoming Joe Hovel to the program. Before we do, I want to note that, you know, for years we've heard Republican lawmakers campaign against budget earmarks. They said that they weren't transparent about new government spending. Well, the legislature in Wisconsin has kind of an anti-earmark, I guess you could call it, where, again, it's a non-transparent process by which an anonymous legislator could hold up spending and, in this case, put millions of dollars in jeopardy and potentially torpedo development and conservation efforts up north and in other parts of Wisconsin. We're going to start specifically talking about the Pelican River Forest between Rhinelander and Crandon, and we're going to do that now with Joe Hovel, who is chairs the Partners in Forestry Cooperative, heads land conservation for Northwoods Alliance Incorporated, is the main author of their Northwoods Forest Conservation Handbooks, and Joe has been involved in Northwoods Forest Conservation for decades, and we're glad to have you here this morning. Joe, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Pat. Thank you for inviting me. I think I would start by saying that the vast majority of forest land in the United States is actually privately owned, even though we hear all these stories about the vast public lands, and they are vast, but the vast majority of forest land in the United States is still privately owned. There's about 475 million acres of privately owned land in the United States. And these lands provide incredible benefits, including clean water, wildlife habitat, wood products, recreation, carbon sequestration, and so forth. The economic activities on these lands are incredibly important. And, as we well know, in northern Wisconsin, our economic drivers are forestry and tourism, and keeping these lands forested is incredibly important for that. Visitors don't come to the north to see stumps and blacktop in a defaced landscape. They come to see lakes and trees, and there's no questioning that. These private lands have been increasingly threatened by development for some time already, and that trend, if anything, is accelerating. I think the worst thing that ever happened to the forest land base in especially northern Wisconsin and the UP, but probably all around the country, was a disposition of lands that started about 30 or so years ago by the industrial owners, the paper mills and so forth. Well, they no longer thought it was viable for them to hold the lands, to own the lands over a long term. But the best thing that happened to the forest land in response to that, in my opinion, at least, is the Forest Legacy Program. The program is federally sponsored. It invests states and conservation partners in long-term permanent protection of the forest base. most often the program is used for conservation easements, as is the case of what the talk is about with the Pelican River Forest. But the program actually also can, and even though it's not used near as much for that, can also be used to help a state government procure fee title to a specific piece of forest land. The important thing to remember with the Forest Legacy Program, I think, is that it is about protecting the land with the Forest Service, State and Private Forestry Division, and the state as a partner with the landowner, but the control of that land stays local. The landowner still owns it. The landowner manages the timber over a very long period of time under a sustainable forestry management plan that includes many other benefits besides just the timber management. So the program was conceived in the 1990 Farm Bill, and from all the research I've done, it was a brainchild of Senator Leahy from Vermont as a response to what he saw in the early days of the disposition of the industrial forest land base in Vermont, upstate New York, New Hampshire, and Maine especially. And it was about, it's been at least 20 years now. I think it was maybe 2001 or thereabouts when the state of Wisconsin adopted the program and has used it incredibly successfully since. As of now, there's at least 49 states and 4 territories that are participating in the Forest Legacy Program. So I often refer to the Forest Legacy Program as grand scale land conservation. And I think it's just so vital for our local economies and our way of life in the North to maintain this scale of forest land and forest management.
Sure. So let's talk about the Pelican River Forest story here. It is the largest remaining block of privately owned forest land in the state. It's been owned by, as you mentioned, paper companies and others over the years. It's now owned by a national environmental group called the Conservation Fund. And what they do, what I get from reading about it is, in a way, what they do is they buy some time to create a plan, one that does allow for, you know, some development often along the periphery, allows for sustainable logging, which saves jobs. It allows for recreational opportunities, and key to your point, keeps the land on the tax rolls by being privately held. In other words, it's the complete opposite of what you don't want, which is scattershot development with no foundation that can lead to overdevelopment. It can chase away forestry jobs. It can chase away recreation and tourism. And so the current status of the Pelican River Forest Project involves using funds from the wildly successful Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program to help, as you mentioned, maintain easements and access. Now, private money and federal funds will handle the overwhelming majority of the money that's needed for this plan, but there does need to be this bit of state money from the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program. And one legislator, Republican Senator Mary Felskowski, is blocking that, something that she could do anonymously in the beginning because of a quirk in the legislative rules. She, like some other Republicans, think there's already too much land in conservation because, I mean, my words, not hers, but won't somebody think of the developers who wouldn't be able to put a McMansion up and refer to it as a cabin? So, Joe, with all of that said, the state leaders, state Republicans, let me put it this way instead, have been increasingly making this point that too much land is locked up in conservation, but they make it sound like it's land that's put away, is never put to use, doesn't generate any kind of economic benefit whatsoever. And it sounds like nothing could be further from the truth.
I fully agree with you, Pat. The Conservation Fund is a conservation group, and I probably would not refer to them as an environmental group, but I think saying an environmental group may refer to a group that would look to set the land aside, maybe even prohibit certain public activities on it, for goodness sakes. And you know what? Something like that could be an alternative if a common sense conservation project like this was deemed unsuccessful. I think you made a really good point about the vast majority of the funding for this project coming from out of state. And I would add to that, that if for some reason this project doesn't get done, those funds are going to go to a different state, and Wisconsin's going to lose about $11.5 million of outside money. It's going to go to a different state to benefit the forestry future and enhance forest in a different state if it doesn't go through here. And I think that's really a sad documentary of our state's legacy of land conservation.
Well, and this is nothing new from Senator Mary Falzkowski. She has a long history of wanting to limit options for hunting and outdoor recreation, instead allow for the development of things like strip malls, golf courses, condominiums. And in fact, last year, she reportedly introduced Senate Bill 802, which would make it easier to sell off land that had been bought with Knowles Nelson dollars, essentially undermining the program and, you know, undermining the spirit of conservation in this for, as I mentioned before, that rather scattershot development. And I guess let's for a moment here, Joe, give her the benefit of the doubt, because one of the things that she said about the Pelican River Forest proposal is that she would like to see some of the land along highways 8 and 45 removed from those parcels, so again that they could be developed, whether it's, you know, strip malls or what have you. Can we, if we're going to give her the benefit of the doubt for at least a second here, is there that argument to be made that you can modify a proposal like this along already established corridors for economic development?
I believe that's the case. In my recent conversation with folks from the Conservation Fund, they stated very clearly that they recently met with the town of Monaco, who had some opposition to this based on that very fact that they didn't want the easement land to encroach on what would be future prime residential land. And to quote what they said to me, that the Conservation Fund could not agree more with them. In meeting with the town late December and in recent conversations, the Conservation Fund has been very clear that excluding parcels from the easement boundary that are within the mixed use and residential development zones is a step in the right direction. Rather than following arbitrary boundaries shown roughly in the comp plan, we asked the town to refine the location of excluded parcels using their local knowledge to make sure they exclude developable parcels and not unnecessarily remove parcels whose highest and best use is forestry, wildlife, or water protection. Another thing that I would add to this in their conversations with the town is that this easement is very much in line with most of the town's master planning, for goodness sakes, because one of the concerns that the town clearly states in their planning is they are concerned about unnecessary and over-harvesting of forest land so it can be converted to other uses, which could increase the residential base at a pace that the services are not able to provide. So in many ways, this conservation easement through the Forest Legacy Program is a win-win, and it's very, very much in line with a very big part of the town of Monaco's master plan.
Exactly. And it should be noted that what Senator Falzkowski did with by first anonymously putting a block on the state money is not the first time that's happened. A similar project in Ozaukee County was held up anonymously by a legislator. Thankfully, Governor Tony Evers was able to use some pandemic relief funds to fund some of those projects instead. So this is something we will continue to monitor. And Joe Hovell, I greatly appreciate your time and hope we can come back and have a bit of an update about this and learn even more about the Forest Legacy Program in future visits. Joe, thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Sounds great. Have a great day. Should note, I mean, in the Pelican River Forest, we're talking 68 miles of streams, 27,000 acres of forested wetlands, dozens of ponds with water that flows into both the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River watersheds. This is valuable stuff that, again, we need that. We need a plan, not what, Senator Felskowski is trying to defend. More after this. You're up north. Back now on Up North News Radio for this Tuesday morning, just to kind of tie a bow on things with the Pelican River Forest proposal here. Again, if you do something like this right with a plan, you do in fact get economic development along the periphery of lands that you want to conserve and maintain for, you know, recreation especially. For example, the Conservation Fund notes that water-based recreation like boating and fishing, contributes a significant amount of the nearly $8 billion annually of economic impact of outdoor recreation in Wisconsin. So again, the sustainable management of working timberland is so key here for the state's forest product industry. Wisconsin's forest products industry provides more than 63,000 full and part-time jobs and has an economic input of $25 billion annually. That can't be done if there isn't a plan, and if instead you just sell it off in tiny parcels for the next, you know, strip mall or condominium development and don't make a master plan for things like stormwater management to maintain the quality of those waters. And so having an organized plan for sustainable forestry in these areas should not be held up by politicians who are looking to score points to own the libs, basically, is to say, well, we've had enough of this conservation. It is very clear that conservation is not about locking land away, but having that kind of a well-managed plan. One other note I wanted to share today, and I actually want to thank Kristen Lyerly for putting it up on her Facebook page. She takes note that, well, she just straight up calls it misinformation coming out from a couple of candidates for school board in De Pere. The candidates are using the kind of rhetoric like take back our city and save our schools from going woke and going broke. And, you know, Kristen notes that she is someone who believes in building a community and working together to have a brighter tomorrow for everyone. And that she would ask people in De Pere to value candidates or to consider candidates who value honesty and transparency over deception and fear. I mean, that's a nicer way than the way I'm about to put it, because that kind of garbage language that you're seeing from school board candidates in De Pere, you're going to start seeing all over the state ahead of school board primary elections in February and general elections in April. And so, again, with a warning, I'm going to use a naughty word here, but let's again provide a vital public service translation of the word woke. When you hear somebody in politics using woke, keep in mind that woke simply means, in my words, don't be a bigoted ass. Woke is a convenient and sarcastic punchline for conservatives, but it's also an admission of what they're actually opposed to. People who criticize wokeness are telling you about their opposition to diversity, openness, great public education for every child, an honest view of history, putting science and facts over partisan and religious ideology, and so forth. So when someone uses the word woke, that tells me all I need to know about their being unfit to serve in any office from school board on. And by the way, it's not just avoiding going woke and going broke. We're not broke. Republicans in Madison have sat on a multi-billion dollar surplus for a year, refusing to invest in our kids, in our small businesses, in our infrastructure, and in middle-class tax relief. It is long past time that those Republican legislators were given heat and made to feel some sense of shame for refusing to help their constituents for a year, instead taking that nearly 10-month paid vacation, and now trying to force through another massive tax break for only their wealthiest supporters. If a school board candidate can't call out Republican legislators who've been doing this, then those school board candidates cannot be trusted to care for every kid in their district. Anti-woke is simple shorthand for having no actual policy ideas that improve society, only some stoked up grievances that are rooted in the darkest parts of their individual character. So just keep that in mind when you're hearing, don't go woke, don't go broke. On a much lighter note, it's a reminder that Civic Media is growing its network of radio stations. We've added some friends in Green Bay this week. Many more are coming. And so to celebrate the addition of however many stations, we're getting mighty close to a baker's dozen here. We are happy to tell you that Civic Media is sponsoring a $1 million advertising giveaway. It's your chance as a small business owner to work with Civic Media to create a radio advertising campaign that promotes your business for free. But you have to apply, and all the applications open up starting next week, Thursday, the 26th at 9 a.m. Look for more details on Civic Media social media posts on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you can get full details at civicmedia.us/million. Let folks know you heard about it on Up North News Radio as well. I haven't looked through all the rules, Aaron. I don't know if there are rules against, there's probably definitely rules against, insider access to this, but it seems to me we have an opportunity, you and I, to start our own small business here and get some of this free advertising.
Yeah, I'll have to read through the terms and conditions. I mean, they're not long. We're not talking iTunes here. You're not going to have to take a year off from work to read it. You're just going to have to take a couple minutes.
I mean, look, if they're not banning insider use of it, I mean, Dom's going to open up a dispensary and try to get advertising for that. And, Chad up in Wausau will try something. And so I don't see why you and I, or maybe you and I and Todd Alba, heard next on many of these Civic Media stations where Aaron produces Todd as well. Maybe the three of us need to go in on some kind of a small business.
He's probably listening right now. So we'll have to ask him.
I can only imagine what we would do. Over at upnorthnewswi.com, we're getting back into the swing of things after a bit of a holiday break. And what you will find there in great quantity is a series of best of lists, best places to go, best things to eat, best things to enjoy. Some of them depend on the weather. Some of them are year-round things. And so you'll definitely want to check out those articles at upnorthnewswi.com, or better yet, find us on social media. Just search for Up North News WI. And on the Up North News Facebook page, you can then leave your own comments about what you would suggest we add to some future best of lists all around Wisconsin. All right, a reminder that tomorrow we're going to be talking to Sarah Godlewski and also judicial candidate Chris Taylor for the Court of Appeals, along with more headlines and reaction to the day's events and your phone calls if you care to share your point of view as well. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. We'll see you back here on Up North News Radio tomorrow morning at 6:00.